Okay, so I want to start our deep dive today with a quote. It's from the philosopher Daniel Dennett, and it really just stopped me in my
Oh,
tracks.
yeah. Let's hear it.
He said, "The designs found in nature are nothing short of brilliant, but the process of design that generates them is utterly lacking in intelligence of its own."
Right. And that's just a fantastic, almost unsettling way to frame this whole conversation, isn't it?
It is.
It forces you to look this paradox head on. How do you get these genius level designs, I mean, a mammalian eye, an immune system, from a process that is, well, completely blind?
Exactly. And that's our topic today. We're diving into the field of artificial life.
And we should be really clear right up front.
Yes.
We are not talking about sci-fi robots. This isn't a movie plot.
No, this is a rigorous scientific field.
Yeah.
We're looking at it through the lens of, you know, engineering and applied science based on the definitions from Chris Langton.
Right. The whole idea is to move beyond life as we know it.
That phrase kept coming up in the reading.
It's the key distinction. Life as we know it is, you know, carbon-based, it's DNA, it's what we have here on Earth.
Which is really a sample size of one.
Basically, yeah. So artificial life tries to explore life as it could be. It makes this huge assumption that life isn't about the stuff. It's about the organization.
The form, not the matter. And for any engineering students listening, this is the core idea. The hypothesis is that if you get the logical rules right, the substrate, you know, carbon, silicon, whatever, it just doesn't matter.
Which is a bold claim. I mean, biology is wet and messy.
Yeah, it's not a logic gate.
But that is the foundational premise of AL, the belief that you can abstract the logic of life from the stuff of life.
So how do you actually do that? How do you build life from logic? The sources talk about a shift from top down to bottom up.
Correct. Traditional biology is top down. You take a frog, you dissect it, you analyze it. You're reverse engineering a finished product.
AL flips that on its head.
Completely. It tries to synthesize lifelike behaviors from scratch.
So you start with the parts and just hope the frog emerges?
Kind of. But you're not designing the frog. That's the critical part. Langton's whole methodology is you start with a huge population of very simple components, simple machines.
And you just program their local interactions?
Just the local ones. You give them a set of rules and artificial physics, if you will.
And then you just let it run.
You let them interact. And this is crucial, especially for the math folks listening. Those interactions have to be nonlinear.
Okay, let's pause there. Why is nonlinearity so important?
Because in a linear system, the whole is just the sum of its parts. You add more sand to a pile, you get a bigger pile, it's predictable.
Right.
Nonlinear means you have feedback loops. Small changes can trigger huge, unpredictable shifts in the whole system.
And if you've picked your rules right,
yeah,
you get that aha moment.
Yeah.
You get emergence.
That's the word, emergence. You get global dynamics, global behaviors that you never, ever programmed in explicitly. The whole becomes greater than the sum of its parts.
There was a great analogy in the source material that just as natural life emerges from non-living things like atoms obeying physics, artificial life emerges from these formal components just following their logical rule.
Exactly. Yeah. Your code is your physics. The behavior that emerges from it, that's your artificial biology.
The search for the universal rules of life.
That's the grand ambition. Mm. But, you know, this brings us to a major split in the field, a really important distinction for anyone working in this area.
You're talking about simulation versus realization.
Yep. Hard AL versus soft AL.
Soft AL is the one I think most people get intuitively.
Right.
It's a model.
It's mimetic. It's a metaphor. You're studying lifelike behavior, like a flight simulator. You learn about flying, but nobody thinks the computer is actually on its way to Chicago.
Right.
But hard AL, that makes a much, much stronger claim.
That's the realization part.
The goal is realization. The claim is that if your artificial organization functions like life, then it is life, a genuine instance of it, just made of, you know, different stuff.
Okay, let's push on that. The classic example is Boyds, right? The flocking birds.
The perfect case study. It was created by Craig Reynolds. And the beauty of it is its simplicity.
I looked up the algorithm. It's just three rules for every single agent.
Separation, alignment, and cohesion.
So break those down.
Okay, separation is just don't crowd your neighbors. Alignment, steer in the same general direction as your neighbors. And cohesion, try to stay in the center of the group of your neighbors.
And that's it.
That is literally it. Three simple rules.
But when you run it, you get this beautiful, fluid flocking motion. It looks just like starlings in the sky.
So here's where the hard AL argument comes in. Langton himself says, look, the Boyds are not birds. They have no body. They are just information structures.
Which is true. They're just pixels on a screen.
But he argues the flocking is genuine. The behavior itself is a real instance of flocking. It's not a simulation of flocking. It is flocking just happening in a digital medium.
So the pattern is the reality, not the stuff it's made of.
That's the hard AL position. But not everyone buys it. This is where we have to bring in Howard Pattee's critique. The epistemology trap.
The wetness argument. This felt like the strongest counterpoint in all the readings.
It's a powerful one. Patty says a simulation that just symbolically stands for something is completely different from a material realization.
Right.
You can simulate a thunderstorm perfectly, every variable, every molecule, but inside the computer, it is not raining. You do not get wet.
A simulation of digestion doesn't break down any food.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Patty's point is that function requires a physical interaction with an environment. If your artificial life is just shuffling symbols inside a box, is it really alive? Or is it just a very, very fancy calculator?
That distinction feels, I mean, it feels fundamental, especially in computer science, where we often mistake the model for the reality.
And this brings us to the critics. Because if you're a grad student thinking about this, you need to be ready for some serious pushback.
Oh, yeah. I saw some quotes. John Maynard Smith calling AL basically a fact-free science. That's pretty harsh.
It is, but it points to a real danger. The charge is that you're just playing with computer rules until you see something you like.
There was that term from Scientific American, the seductive syllogism. I think we should walk through that. It explains the trap so well.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, premise one. Computers use simple rules to make complex patterns.
True. We see it with Boyds.
Premise two. The natural world contains complex patterns.
Also true.
Conclusion. Therefore, simple rules must underlie the world's complexity.
And there's the leap of faith.
Right. Just because my simple rule creates a pattern that looks like a zebra's stripes doesn't mean that's how zebras actually get their stripes.
The critic Jack Cowan called these accidental features. You tweak your program and suddenly, hey, that looks like a bacteria colony.
You're just seeing faces in the clouds. It's a subjective resemblance.
If that's the term. And in biology, we have a way to check that. We have biochemistry. We can look at the DNA, the RNA. There's a physical reality we can test our theories against.
In AL, you don't have that anchor.
We don't have a formal threshold of complexity. There's no objective metric that says, okay, now your program is officially alive. Without that, it's just, well, it looks alive to me. And that's not great science.
So validation is the central problem. If you're building a simulation, you can validate it against the real world. Does it match the data?
Right.
But if you're trying to synthesize something totally new, life as it could be, what do you compare it to?
You're grading your own homework. Unless, and this is the big unless, you have a strong material independent theory of life.
Which brings us to the theoretical framework. This is where it gets really useful for our engineering listeners. Systemhood versus thinghood.
Right. This is the toolkit from system science. Thinghood is the physical stuff. You know, feathers, silicon, carbon atoms. Systemhood is the abstract organizational pattern, flocking, evolution, adaptation.
And the goal of AL is to extract the systemhood from the thinghood.
To peel the logic away from the matter. But it's a balancing act, and this is where people can go wrong.
How so?
If you abstract too much, if you totally ignore the thinghood, you end up with those fact-free analogies, you know, a galaxy looks like a hurricane. Well, yes, but they're governed by completely different physics.
Okay. And if you abstract too little,
then you're just a data collector. You're stuck in the weeds talking about one specific gene in one specific organism. You have data, but no general principles.
So for the engineers listening, why is this balancing act so important? Let's say I'm not trying to create a digital life form. I'm just building a better network.
Because even if we never achieve hard AL, this process of extracting principles gives us bio-inspired computing. That's the practical take-home value.
We're talking about reverse engineering nature's algorithms.
Precisely. Think about the problems living systems have already solved. They adapt. They self-organize. They have immune systems that handle brand new threats.
These are engineering gold mines?
Totally. Let's take one example from the notes. Stigmergy.
Okay, what is stigmergy?
It's indirect communication through the environment. It's how ant colonies work. An ant finds food, it doesn't shout about it, it lays down a pheromone trail. The next ant follows it and reinforces it. The environment becomes the memory.
Okay, so as a network engineer, how do I use that? I don't have pheromones.
No, but you have data packets. You can design a routing algorithm where a packet that finds a fast, clear path leaves a little digital pheromone, a marker. Other packets are attracted to that marker.
And if the path gets congested or goes down?
The marker fades, like the pheromone evaporates. Packets naturally start exploring other routes.
Wow. So the network routes itself, there's no central controller.
Exactly. It's robust. It's decentralized. You took the system hood, the logic of the ant trail, and applied it to a totally different thing hood, to silicon.
The other big one was immunity. Our cybersecurity model feels very top-down. We have a big list of known viruses.
Signature-based detection, which works great until a brand new virus appears that isn't on your list.
A zero-day attack.
And then you're vulnerable. But a biological immune system uses a self versus non-self model. It knows what you look like, and it attacks anything that doesn't fit that profile.
So in software, you'd build an artificial immune system that learns the normal state of your network.
Yes. The normal memory usage, the normal traffic, and it flags anything that deviates from that baseline, even if it's never seen that specific attack before. It's detecting the weird behavior, not a known signature.
That is just brilliant. Yeah. So you don't need the actual ants. You just need the algorithm the ants discovered through evolution.
That's the power of this field. You're taking Dennett's brilliant designs, stripping away the biology, and porting that logic to solve our problems.
So we've really come full circle here. From these tiny, simple rules, all the way to this massive philosophical debate, and then back to very practical engineering applications.
And that tension is where the field lives. It has to stay grounded in the biology, but it also has to reach for those abstract, universal principles.
Okay, before we finish, I want to leave everyone with the unanswered question from the end of the notes. It references Rosen and Patti again, and it feels like the ultimate cliffhanger for this whole topic.
It really is the ultimate provocation.
The question is this. Are there systems where systemhood cannot be completely abstracted from thinghood?
In other words, is it possible that life is fundamentally inextricably tied to its specific matter?
Right. We just assume we can run a mind on silicon because it's just logic. But what if we're wrong?
What if there's something about the messy quantum thermodynamic reality of carbon that is essential? What if you actually can't have the software without that very specific wet hardware?
If that's true, then the whole dream of hard AL is impossible.
It might be. It would mean life is a material process, not just a logical one. But if it's false, if logic really is universal, well, then we're just getting started.
It's a huge gamble for the entire field.
But that's what makes it such exciting science.
So for everyone listening, as you go back to your work, whether you're modeling a system or debugging code, just ask yourself this. Are you building a simulation? Or are you trying to build a realization? And are you sure you really know the difference?
That's the question to ponder.
Thanks for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.